Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The Pentagon is launching balloons over the Midwest, including South Dakota, for narcotics surveillance. The American Civil Liberties Union has conveyed concerns over privacy, but is there more to the story? And for a third time, South Dakota voters could be deciding on a medical marijuana measure in November 2020. That's if proponents can gather enough signatures of qualified voters by this November. It's just a couple of the topics laid out for today's Dakota Political Junkies. And joining us now by phone, we have John Hunter, publisher of the Madison Daily Leader. Hello, John. Welcome back.
Hi, Lori. Thanks.
Also joining us from the Tom and Danielle Amon Foundation Studio in Aberdeen, John Schaff. He's professor of political science and department chair at Northern State University. Professor Schaff, welcome.
Good to be here.
All right, gentlemen, let's start out with the surveillance balloons. The balloons themselves were actually manufactured by Raven in South Dakota, and they've launched as part of a persistent surveillance system for narcotic trafficking and homeland security threats. John Hunter, start us off with this one. What do you make of this story?
Well, there's, of course, two sides to every story, sometimes many more, but in this case, so the federal government is trying to get a system set up for surveillance or tracking narcotics trafficking, in which a lot of people think, well, that's a good idea, right? If we have illegal trafficking of narcotics, we'd want to get those. Pretty high-tech situation, send up these balloons, which seem low-tech, but, you know, they can get up to 65,000 feet, and it's a little like the U-2 spy plane, right, at 70,000 feet from 50 or 60 years ago. And high-tech radar and cameras and so forth, apparently very good. The flip side is, of course, that the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution says that you know, we can't have kind of illegal searches, or, you know, can't come into your house or search you without probable cause. And so I think some people, including the ACLU, are concerned that this is some sort of searching Big Brother kind of surveillance without probable cause. So we've got two sides working here.
All right, John Schaff, what are some of your initial thoughts?
Well, they're kind of alongside John's, and it reminds me of the debates we had when we were talking many years ago now about the Patriot Act. And one of the things that's going on here is that the government can surveil us, but precisely as John's just indicating, because of the Fourth Amendment, any information they use, I don't know how they could possibly use it in court of law. I am not a lawyer, but I play one sometimes in the classroom. And it's problematic because you have no warrant. And so how that be, it's one thing to be surveilling people for national security reasons, which is how under the Patriot Act they got away with some of the provisions there, is that the intention was not to use it in the court of law and the information that they would get from that surveillance. And so without a warrant, I don't know how you could use this information. And I think the other concern is simply the collection of data, even if it's never used for anything. That the fact that the government would have so much information about us, it's not dissimilar to concerns people have about surveillance with technology, the way Google or Facebook oftentimes, without our knowledge, are gathering information about us. And my guess is that their intentions are benign, but we shouldn't be so naive, whether it's about corporations or about our government, when they gather all sorts of information about us and they're storing that, and we can't just assume that it's always going to be a benign use of that information. I'm sure that's part of what's motivating the ACLU.
All right, so we talk about narcotics surveillance, but there's also this idea of homeland security threats, which they've clearly said is a possibility, and John Schaff brings up the Patriot Act. Are we focusing, John Hunter, too much on the fact that these balloons are going to be used to stop narcotics trafficking? Governor Kristi Noem said, hey, if we can help, launch your balloons. Certainly we don't want drug trafficking. But what about this homeland security component? There seems to be more to the story there.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm not sure where that is going exactly. So for some of us, it kind of took us by surprise. We didn't know this was kind of coming. The FCC approved that and went ahead and launched, and they didn't call the Madison Day Leader to tell us they were going to do this, and so we're trying to follow up with that. I think the idea, when you go homeland security or even the term probable cause, you expand it so broadly that it that it almost becomes, you know, you can surveil anything. And as John pointed out, you know, collecting all this data, and then could you, for example, if you saw something suspicious, you know, you saw that on your tape, then you race off to a judge, get a warrant, and then further follow that person. Does that? So yes, you could theoretically in court be using the data after you got the warrant, but you used kind of non-warranted information to get it in the first place, and that confuses me.
John Schaff, you could use it to monitor, I don't know, pipeline protests as people might attack infrastructure. That would be a Homeland Security conversation, would it not?
Potentially, and I think this is sort of what we're getting at, and it'll be interesting to see what kind of arguments the ACLU puts forward on this. What we're seeing is that this line between law enforcement and Homeland Security is not exactly bright and shiny, and we probably... It doesn't need to be crystal clear, but it maybe needs to be more brighter and shinier than it is. And so, because it allows the government, depending if they've got if the balloons are there and they're surveilling, it allows the government when convenient to say this is law enforcement, and then when it's convenient to say this is Homeland Security, and it seems like you'd want something more definitive than that to not allow the government to justify what it's already doing based on kind of expedience. And so I think it's something, I don't think I know enough about the law to be definitive about it, but I think I know enough to be concerned, and we'll see how this plays out.
John Hunter, do you think we'll get more definitive information from the government about the intention of these balloons when they're deployed, when they aren't? Are you connecting the same dots that I was there?
Well, I kind of have a question for you guys too. This, as it relates to that, first of all, this is a temporary situation. I think it only stays in effect for 6 weeks or 8 weeks or something like that. So there may be something after that that they would need to renew that. But how is this much different from spy satellites that are currently all over the globe and that are already doing this kind of work? Is this a different technology? How is that? I assume the satellites are looking at us already, right? At least when we see, you know, installations of North Korean missiles from space. What's the difference here between those balloons and satellites?
Well, I think I can answer that, which is precisely who owns those satellites. And we're reaching the extremities of my knowledge, but I would guess that most of those satellites are owned by the National Security Administration, which falls under the Department of Defense. And the Department of Defense is not supposed to be operating within the United States borders. And so they can do those things precisely because they're surveilling North Korea or some compound in Afghanistan. And so that allows them to do that because, you know, you don't need a warrant to surveil North Korea. That's not part of the criminal justice system. But when you're operating within the boundaries of the United States, now you're dealing with citizens. Well, any person within the United States has constitutional rights. The Constitution isn't limited to persons. To citizens. It's persons. Anyone within the United States has constitutional rights, and that's why I think this is iffy. And so it's always the question. So we have these questions when we were debating the Patriot Act, is this line of when we know now in the kind of the age of terrorism, and even in this case, maybe even narco-terrorism, that this line between national defense and internal criminal justice is sometimes a little blurred. But I think it behooves us to question the government, to even if ultimately, I'm not even saying that these balloons and the surveillance is wrong or illegal, but we need to be vigilant as citizens, and that's what the ACLU is doing, to make sure that they can give an account of this in a court of law, that we're forcing them to define as well as they can where criminal justice ends and where Homeland Security begins or vice versa.
And to clarify a few things here from the Argus Leader report, it says the FCC authorized the corporation's temporary balloons on July 12th. The authorization expires on September 1st. So I'm presuming there that if there's an extended authorization, that we would learn about it through similar channels. And According to The Guardian, reported that the U.S. Southern Command commissioned the tests, and the balloons are carrying sensors and communication gear capable of detecting every vehicle in motion in a 25-mile range beneath the balloon. So potentially, not only who owns the balloon, but what the you know technology is actually capable of if this is testing a new technology that can track vehicles day or night in any kind of weather.
I should wash my car more often if I knew they were going to be watching
it. And also be careful what song you're singing along to. You never know. They might know.
I'm not sure that's the most salient point of the day, but it's...
You can always count on me to deliver non-salient points, Lori.
All right, let's move along and talk a little bit about John Hunter's work, a recent editorial in the Madison Daily Leader about finding mental health professionals for South Dakota. How important is this, John, that we really focus on this as a state?
I think it's extremely important, and the idea is that a lot of our criminal justice system is dealing with issues relating to mental health or counseling, whether it be addiction counseling or all those sorts of things. And I think in a lot of cases, people believe, and I might even say the majority of South Dakotans would say that it's better to treat a drug addiction problem and get it solved rather than incarcerating a person for long periods of time. And of course the state can appropriate money for that, and we can set up the framework for doing that, but if you don't have those mental health professionals and addiction counselors and all that, then nothing gets done. And there is an extreme shortage of those, and we see that in several areas, not only the criminal justice system but also at the Human Services Center and Sioux Falls. It wouldn't surprise me that private hospitals that offer mental health services would be short also. So the idea is that we're going to have to recruit those somehow. We're going to have to train somehow. But I think it's a real deal. There seems to be, you know, and I don't want to tie this necessarily to mass shootings, but in almost all those cases, those are mental health issues that are going with that, that you can't say that good counseling would prevent that, but I think criminal justice is full of these circumstances, and I think we desperately need more people who can help.
There's been some really interesting reports this week about just how many or how few, depending on which report you read, of people who commit mass shootings actually are suffering from mental illness. It's kind of hard sometimes to make that distinction between, you know, criminal behavior and what we surely must think is some kind of mental unhinging. What about how much they're paid, John Hunter? Because when you mentioned the Human Services Center in Yankton, you know, those people with their turnover, they're not making what, say, people at Avera are making, for example. Does the state legislature need to address their salaries?
I believe so. I don't know any of the data, but I think that from what I understand, of course, there's a spectrum of people who work there, anywhere from caregivers for people who are maybe unable to kind of do personal hygiene, to custodial staff, to security, to, you know, landscaping. I mean, there's all sorts of jobs, including the doc, you know, high level doctors and counselors and so forth. So my guess is you'd probably have to do, you know, look at a salary study of all those to try to reduce the turnover. Yeah. First of all, that if you are understaffed, let's say you need, you know, I don't know, 300 people or what, I don't know the numbers, but, and if you've only got 240 people, I think there's a physical safety element to that people, that patients maybe that don't have control could attack staff and so forth. So I think it's dangerous to be understaffed, and certainly frequent turnover contributes to that. So, yeah, I would guess that, and it wouldn't surprise me if they've done some sort of salary studies in order to get that. But it may need more people to move to Yankton to fulfill those needs.
Yeah, and as I understand it, they close down parts of the facility if they can't staff them, which means there's your increase in waiting to get into the facility as well.
Which then means they're probably in county jails in South Dakota, which, you know, has been pretty full in a lot of cases too because of drug and alcohol circumstances. So there's going to be pressure somewhere. There's no release valve.
Right. John Schaff, this is something the state legislature is certainly working on a broad scope of trying to figure out. There's five committees, doing research right now, or task force. I can't remember the right terminology there. But I'm not going to say help is on the way, but, it seems like this is something that everybody can get behind.
Yeah, and I think what John's talking about, and this relates to, one of the things via email that we were chatting about, talking about today, is the state is asking the federal government to ease some regulations that would make it easier for the state to fight opioid addiction. And I think what we're seeing, and when John was talking, I thought of mass shootings too. That what we see in the United States, we see it in our own state in particular, is we seem to be having this increase in mental health problems. I think there's a real question whether the state has the infrastructure in place to deal effectively with those with that mental health problem. For example, if I can be parochial, think about higher education. Do we have the counseling programs necessary? Do we have social work programs? I believe I'm thinking that possibly USD is currently the only BSW. Almost certainly, the USF might have one. But of the public institutions, I believe that USD is the only university with a social work degree, and certainly a master's of social work degree. Do we have enough social workers? Do we want people who have that higher certification? Because a lot of instances, our social service agencies don't require the social work degree. You can get through with a human services degree. Do we want to require a higher and better, and then educate them that we can develop within our state the kind of people that we need to do these kinds of jobs? But then, as you indicate, these are highly professional people, and they expect to be compensated as such. And so this is, I think, kind of a continual issue with the state, is we oftentimes try to get by with good enough, and then in certain instances there kind of is this critical mass, or we see it kind of a tension rising. And we're seeing this, I think, we've seen this with nursing homes, mental health care, all sorts of things that maybe we haven't invested enough, and now it's going to take a big move by the state, maybe to get this up to where it needs to be, that we can be doing an adequate job.
And let's wrap up with efforts by Attorney General Jason Roundsburg talking about Congress removing federal barriers to treat opioid use disorder. We have a new medication-assisted facility in Rapid City opening up. And this is all, John Hunter, about this idea of, if we can't prevent it, we at least have to, we need to prevent it, we need to enforce the law, and then we also need to help people get into treatment. This is a three-legged stool, really.
Yes, it is. And as you remember, Governor Noem really kind of made that point during her first legislative session about each of those, that it needs to be a multifaceted approach. I'm encouraged that it's a follow-through point, that they're trying to get some things done at the congressional level that might help us. I didn't, we were all hoping it wouldn't be just words during a legislative session, but that it would follow through. And at least from the surface, it looks as though it's being followed through, and I'm glad to see that.
All right, medical marijuana as a ballot issue. It's attempted to get on the ballot before and has not passed. What do we see coming, John Schaff? Do we think that there is more momentum than there has been in the past for medical marijuana in South Dakota now?
Well, as you say, they've tried before. They've been unsuccessful. I mean, it's gone to the people before and been voted down. Then another time, they failed to get the adequate number of signatures to even get on the ballot. So I guess we're having a maybe third time's a charm. Nationwide, there is obviously a move towards an overall legalization of marijuana. And this would just be medical marijuana. And I think it's a question of whether the state of South Dakota is willing to sort of dip its toes in that direction. We know that the governor on the hemp issue was hesitant, even on industrial hemp, because she said that she was cautious because she didn't want to give any indication, even though I think there's a pretty firm line between hemp and marijuana. But nonetheless, I sort of see her point that she didn't want to give any indication that South Dakota was going to move in the direction of legalization of marijuana. And that's where I think a lot of people think, I think that's the hesitancy, is that this is simply the first step towards legalization. And so I guess we'll find out where the people of South Dakota are at. Are they moving more in line with a lot of other voters in other states, or are we going to be a little bit more cautious? I mean, I'll note that in Minnesota, they had a legalization bill during their legislative session, and somewhat surprising to me, it died pretty quickly. And so maybe that momentum on marijuana isn't quite what we thought it was. And we'll see if South Dakota is more like Minnesota, or are we more like Colorado? I guess we'll find out.
And John Hunter, you think there is traction for medical marijuana in the state, or is it a matter of time?
No, I think John nailed it. I don't think this is part of the playbook, right? That you ask for these things that seem innocuous and eventually move up to that. But I do think their momentum is slowing nationwide. I think that I would not, you know, at one point I think you might have said the whole nation is going to do that. Now I don't think that's quite the same. So
you don't think the momentum with CBD oil and things like that are going to change that conversation as well?
I don't think in South Dakota. I mean, that we certainly have had that. Remember that conversation? I think it was in Rapid City where that CBD oil was being marketed, and the attorney general came and said that that's not part of the current law. So no, I may be wrong, but it just feels as though the momentum is slowing on that.
All right. John Hunter, John Schaff, today's Dakota Political Junkies. Thank you so much for being here. We appreciate your time.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.